Alrighty, I hope you live through it. Welcome to the program. It's the 31st day of July 2019. That's the last day in July, if you're keeping score. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. Welcome to it. Thanks for listening. Thank you for telling a friend. Keep doing that, please, every single day. I know I say it every day, but that's only because I mean it. And I appreciate those of you who do it, and you email me and you tell me that you turned on this person to the show or that person, or when people email me saying, hey, I heard about your show through X, Y, or Z. It's nice. It's also nice when people just stumble across it, but I have no idea how that would work. But so it's really all word of mouth. So thank you for that. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. With questions, compliments, complaints, whatever you got. You can also enter to win the signed Molly Hemingway, Carrie Severino book on what I'm looking right at it. I'm having a huge brain fart right at the top of the show. Justice on Trial, the Kavanaugh Confirmation, and the Future of the Supreme Court, signed, autographed in Sharpie by both of them in person, right in front of me, so I can vouch for it. We'll do the drawing coming up soon. I'm not sure. I'm still working on trying to get somebody in this week, so we'll see how that works out. Might be next week. You never know. Getting a stockpile of books. What do you care? They're free books. Boy, oh boy. I sat there and I digested the Democratic debate, and right now it's about where it deserves to be, in the form it deserves to be, after you digest something. God, that was long. That was really long. I saw that CNN had 3 hours blocked out on, you know, the cable guide thing. I was like, does this start at 8 or 9? And I looked, and it starts at 8. And then I said, it goes to 11. And I'm like, it can't go to 11, can it? Can't do three-hour debate. I was thinking, if they do 3 hours tomorrow, Joe Biden is going to pass out. There's no way he can stand on his feet for 3 hours. But they didn't go, they went about 2 hours and 45 minutes. It was in my old hometown, my birthplace, Detroit, Michigan. Beautiful Fox Theater. The Fox Theater is amazing. At one point, I think it was the 80s, the Fox Theater was abandoned or run down or whatever. And like most good things in Detroit that are doing well now, Mike Ilitch came in. Mike Ilitch founded Little Caesars, and he owns the Red Wings and the Tigers, and he bought the Fox Theater, and he revamped the Fox Theater. I went and saw Gone with the Wind at the Fox Theater. I think it was at the Fox. Maybe it wasn't. I've seen some old revival movies at the Fox Theater. I also saw The Cult and Lenny Kravitz at the Fox Theater. That was pretty cool, too, except for people were jumping. There's a balcony at the Fox. It was built 100 years ago. And I could see everybody's jumping around, and we were under the balcony, and the balcony is bowing with the weight of the people jumping. And I'm like, I'm gonna die at a Cult and Lenny Kravitz concert. And I don't want to die at a Cult and Lenny Kravitz concert. I thought that thing was coming down, but it didn't. So yeah, there was the debate was there. CNN had two moderators that did a fairly decent job. And then they had Don Lemon. I thought that Jake Tapper did a fairly decent job, and Dana Bash did okay. Don Lemon, I don't know if you watched this thing, and I don't blame you if you, I don't know, went and bought a car or moved during this debate. It was so damn long. But Don Lemon was an embarrassment. Don Lemon was absolutely terrible. He should have been up there as a candidate, honestly. His questions were pathetic. Here, well, I'll give you, let's just listen to one example of Don Lemon asking a question.
What do you say to those Trump voters who prioritize the economy over the president's bigotry?
He's a serious journalist, folks. Don Lemon, he's got a wall full of plaques with his name on it, certificates and every. What do you say to those idiots out there who just care about the economy and not the president's racism? Racism, racism. Of course it comes from Don Lemon. If you ever watch his show, I always say Stephanie Ruhle is the dumbest person on cable television. That's because she is. Primetime Stupid is monopolized by Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon. The MSNBC lineup is they just lie. I don't think that they're stupid. They're just completely dishonest, and they're cool with that. They don't care if people know that they're dishonest. They care that their supporters, they care about their supporters who don't know. And sadly, that's a lot of people. But Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon, at the end of their when they one show leads into the other, if you really want to see a hurricane of stupid, watch the handoff. They do that really awkward banter for exceedingly long. It's surprising where they just talk to each other. I always thought that cable news was far too much, you know, a cable news host talking to a cable news network's employee. And that's true. There are far too many worthless contributors and who cares about their opinions. Once you heard them, you know them. You've seen these people so many times since both all networks have the same 10 people on all the time that you could answer the question that they're posing to these people. So I hope that there's a ratings downslope coming soon for all of cable. But for some reason, CNN takes that to a new level. They think that the American people want to see Fredo Cuomo talking to Dumb Lemon. And that's his new name, Dumb Lemon. Because he's dumb. At one point in the debate, Dumb Lemon was asking about gun control, and he asked, how are we supposed to believe you will do this gun control measure? We. Again, showing his colors. That's just how CNN works. Normal, well, I can't even say now, because it would be, there was a time, or so I'm told, in journalistic history, where that sort of stuff was frowned upon, where people would have been disciplined or perhaps reminded that they are not the participant in the debate. They are merely the moderator, and they are supposed to be an impartial moderator. It is not a we. It is not an us. It is a, you are the person asking questions. But that's dead and gone across all networks, all platforms. Everybody knows where everybody's coming from. And they still, what's funny is the liberals still pretend, well, I'm a serious journalist. No, you aren't, Don Lemon. You should be suspended for how bad you are at journalism. You should have never been hired. But hey, CNN has different criteria. It sure as hell ain't ratings. Anyway, beyond that, it was a complete feces show. What a joke that debate was. At the end of it, my takeaway was that the Democratic Party, every candidate is promising every American a unicorn that craps gold, pays your mortgage, pays for college, gives you health care, and will give you foot rubs on demand. It is just, if you want it, if the people want it, you can have it. They talk about health care is a right. This should be a right. College should be a right. The other thing should be a right. Meanwhile, the right to keep and bear arms is plainly stated in the Bill of Rights, and all they want to do is repeal that. They don't understand how rights work and how the Constitution works, or they don't care. Either way, they're dangerous, dangerous people. But before we get to the actual substance of the debate, beforehand, they had Tom Perez. For those of you who don't know who Tom Perez is, he is the current chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He went out there and he praised Al Sharpton and thanked him for fighting for all Americans. And I really, it's amazing to me how little accountability there is for Al Sharpton and his past. He not only doesn't have to pay his taxes, he doesn't have to pay the defamation claims against him that he lost in court, yet he hammers 7 to 8 figure checks every year. I mean, for God's sakes, Al Sharpton, you want to talk about money laundering. He is the president, or whatever the hell it is, some figurehead of the National Action Network. You got a problem with Jews? They're right there with you. He sold his life story to the Action Network, National Action Network, for $900,000. Charitable donations given to this organization, this sham organization. And its president just reaches into its pocket and says, yoink, I'm going to take $900,000, but you can have the rights to my life story so that later on, at some point, long after I'm dead and you're bankrupt, you can try and sell the rights to my life story, and then you'll have a source of revenue. Maybe you can do a movie that would be very interesting of my trials and tribulations of trying to read a teleprompter. That would be interesting. Nobody would watch it. The only interesting parts of his life are the parts that he denies. You know, Tawana Brawley and the race baiting there, the Crown Heights riots, Freddie's Fashion Mart and the dead bodies there. Now he pretends that those didn't happen. It's all about his civil rights work. Now, I wonder if his pay-for-play work will be a part of that, because Al Sharpton is a big pay-for-play guy. If you want to get Al Sharpton to sign a letter of protest against a corporation, it'll cost you about 50 grand. That's what I'm told the going rate is. If you want Al Sharpton to show up to protest at a corporation, you're going to have to pony up a lot more than 50 grand, four times more. Now, this was a few years ago, so I imagine the going rate has gone up now that he is a kingmaker, that every Democrat running for president has to go and kiss his ring, and that ring ain't on his finger. And yet they lined up ready to do it. So, yeah, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee cheering, celebrating Al Sharpton before the debate. This wasn't on TV. He was out there kind of like the warm-up comedian. And I use the word comedian deliberately because one of the things he said was so patently stupid. It's just dumb. These people don't listen to themselves. They don't listen to anybody else. They just say things and smile and nod. He talks, listen to this clip. He's talking about climate change and how it's a moral imperative. Then he says that it's a threat, not just to the planet, but to the universe.
On climate change, because climate change is an economic crisis. It's a public health crisis. It's a moral crisis. It threatens our universe, and we must take action now.
Well, you have 12 years not just to save the planet, you've got 12 years to save the entire universe. My God, things are much worse than I thought. Unbelievable. It's a threat to the universe. To the universe. Our climate, if it changes, is a threat to the universe. And there's the crowd of barking seals, like somebody's throwing the mackerel, going, oh, God, yes, clap, 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 clap. This is amazing. We need to do that. All we need to do is bring about social, economic, racial, climate. Climate justice was something that came up during the debate. Climate justice. What the hell is climate justice? I like this tree. This tree's good. But those other kind of maples, maples are just worthless. Maples are inferior. In fact, maples are born inferior. Pine is the way to go. Don't even get me started about oak, okay? Don't even get me started. I know you're part oak, and I don't mean that like all oak are bad. I'm just saying that you wouldn't want to live in a neighborhood with a bunch of oak trees, right? Am I right? This is where the Democratic Party is. This is probably a conversation that has been had, likely stoned. So that means that only 43% of the Democrats running for president have this had this conversation. But it was an unbelievable debate. There was some disagreement up on the stage. I was surprised. Some pushback against the idea of full-blown socialism. John Delaney, former Maryland congressman, was out there, as was Congressman Tim Ryan from Ohio, trying to convince people, hey, don't go full socialism. We will get destroyed if you go full socialism. It's the canary in the coal mine. It is Gene Hackman in the Poseidon Adventure, where he's trying to convince people that they've got to go up. And they're like, no, we're going to stay right here because this glass ceiling is completely going to hold. And you just sit there and you think, what the hell is wrong with people? But you have to recognize who they're trying to appeal to. They are not trying to appeal to you and me. They will never appeal to you and me, and they don't want to. They don't want to work with anybody. They want to win the Democratic Party's nomination. So they, well, sadly, I think most of them actually believe this crap. Even though you have two canaries in the coal mine chirping like crazy and dying from the gas, they are insisting that it go on, that we must go forward. And then you got Marianne Williamson over there talking about dark forces. Did you see Marianne Williamson? She's Oprah's guru, don't you know? She's made a fortune writing books. She apparently used to live in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, which is serious money and old money. So you can see not too many gurus come out of poor neighborhoods. Have you noticed that? It's weird. All these meditation people, and what you need is a couple of crystals on your collarbones and sit there and really contemplate your day. All those people come from money, it seems. You know why? Because poor people got to work. Poor people don't have time for that crap. But if you inherit money, or you marry money, or you're born into money, you've got all the time in the world to embrace this crap. That's why if I ever find myself making money, I will take care of my children, but it will be in a trust fund with all kinds of strings attached. They're not just going to get money, or they're going to end up either being a guru or a complete loser. And neither one of those are going to be paid for by me. But yeah, you never knew. This guru worked his way up from nothing to now hundreds of millions of dollars telling people to drink tea and get coffee enemas. Doesn't happen. That's probably a sentence that's never been uttered before. Anyway, oddly enough, Marianne Williamson at times actually made more coherent sense than the rest of the people up on the stage. And she was the number... This is one thing that was sort of burning up cable news on all of them and burning up social media, which neither of which is real life, but I feel compelled to tell you. Marianne Williamson was the top searched person on that debate stage by Google. During the debate, people were running to see who Marianne Williamson is, and everybody thought, well, that means that Marianne Williamson won the debate, and Marianne Williamson is a force, and we could be seeing a bump for Marianne Williamson. Will she make the third debate stage? Because the criteria change, and you've got to have more support now and more supporters. I have two words for people who were pushing this narrative last night. Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard, after the first debate, was the top searched person on those stages. Tulsi Gabbard, Hawaii Congresswoman, a rounding error in the polls then, a rounding error in the polls now. People look them up and say, who is this person? And then they immediately forget or go on. Just because you look up somebody, you could sit there like I was if I had never heard of Marianne Williamson, and my eyes kind of cross and I go, what the, who is this nut job? That's what I'd look her up. Like, how did this person get on stage? Has she ever been elected to anything? What does she do? How did she get there? And then you say, oh, she's Oprah's guru. So then it all makes sense. But she was a hit for the 2.5, 2.75 hours of the Democratic debate. She was largely ignored, though, by the other candidates because she is a kook. And she literally did talk about dark forces around the world and in the country that Democrats have to combat. She's all about, she sounds like Ringo Starr back, peace and love. We got to talk about peace and love. Yeah, that's great. But what about North Korea? No, I think if we love them harder, it'll all be good. So I'm going to skip Marianne Williamson and talk about the candidates who were a little bit more serious, had some kind of depth out there-ish. I want to first play the first part of the discussion was about healthcare. It went on far too long. It went on for like an hour and 15 minutes. I'm not even kidding. And people kept going back to it. The candidates kept going back to it. They want, even when they moved on, they, Bernie, I want to conclude more about my answer that I rambled on about before. Well, all of them up there support some sort of government takeover of our health plan, of our healthcare industry. Some of them don't want to ban outright or make illegal private health insurance, whereas most of them do. The two that do the most are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. They are desperate to get their hands on it. They promise you. They swear, they pinky swear, they triple pinky swear that if you just give government all power over healthcare in this country, everything will be better. They talk about the evils of the private health insurance. Elizabeth Warren told a story of a 36-year-old guy with a wife and a kid who is dying of Lou Gehrig's disease. Horrible, tragic, no doubt. And the trials and tribulations that they're having with their insurance company and how they're trying to raise money to pay for their bills. And oddly enough, she didn't give out their website or anything, any information so people could go find it. I thought, she should have said, hey, here's how you can go find it and help these people out. Or instead, she could have really been magnanimous and said, don't give to my campaign now, give to this guy's medical bills. But she's not going to do that. She wants to be president of the United States. But that example is, quite frankly, and this is going to sound harsh, irrelevant. It's what the Democrats do. And they all, a lot of them, had their own personal sad tale of woe of somebody they were talking to. And Klobuchar dropped a name, for example. But the Democrats will trot out the worst case scenario and present it as the norm. And more importantly, they will imply or flat out say, this could be you. Watch yourself. But for the grace of God go you. This could be you. That's why we must act. Whereas in reality, it's 0.0001% of the population that finds himself in this situation, as horrible as it is. And there are, you know, ways to handle this, private charities and whatnot, that could handle this and help these families. They just, for some reason, haven't appealed to them or haven't found the right one yet. Elizabeth Warren could probably help make that connection. But instead, she'd rather use this person as an example rather than do something good. Because if the private sector stepped up, if the public stepped up, that would undercut her argument for the necessity for a government takeover of healthcare. If, say, and one of the numbers I heard floated around, and I don't know that it's true, but I think I heard Elizabeth Warren say on CNN that this family owes $900,000 or has $900,000 in unpaid bills that their evil, evil insurance company won't pay. Putting aside the possibility that they have really bad insurance or they've maxed out or whatever, I bet that the insurance company is doing exactly what they're obligated to do. That's all you can really ask. No insurance company goes, oh, geez, it's a horrible situation. We'll pay more. No company on the planet would do that. But Elizabeth, people could step up and pay that off. That would be a very simple solution. Yet Elizabeth Warren wants to use this horrible example. And I'd be curious to know if any reporter actually follows up and digs into this and finds out more about this case. But if the private sector steps up and takes care of these people, Elizabeth Warren won't then say, all right, well, then I guess we don't need to have socialized medicine. We don't need to outlaw private health insurance. We don't need to criminalize private doctor-patient transactions. We can just move on. My bad, we took care of this guy, and it's problem solved. No, she'll find another worst-case scenario. She wants to legislate. It's the argument with Obamacare was that everybody needs to have health insurance. That's why we need Obamacare. The uninsured, the chronically uninsured, meaning people who are uninsured for more than 2 years, 15 million people in this country. And there are another 15 million people-ish who are uninsured at various... The way that they come up with the uninsured number in this country is bogus. If you have a job and you leave that job for another job and you got your health insurance through the first job, but the new health insurance doesn't kick in for 2 weeks, you got to work 2 weeks, or maybe you took 2 weeks off or whatever between jobs, you're counted as uninsured for that year. And now they count it over a two-year period to make the number even more inflated. Which is weird, because I thought Obamacare was supposed to solve it. Everybody was going to have access, everybody's going to have insurance, yet we still have the same number of uninsured we had when they were trying to sell us Obamacare. Have you ever noticed that? We got millions and tens of millions of uninsured. This bill will fix that. Now we've got it. There is a BFD, according to Joe Biden. Everybody gets their health insurance. And now we need to go further than that, because we still have 30 million uninsured people in this country. And you think, well, what the hell did we do? What happened? I thought we just passed a massive bill. At least that number should be half, right? It's because they have no freaking idea. They're making most of it up. They really do. That's the dirty little secret, is they make that number up. They've got a ballpark, and who's going to call them out on it? Anyway, Elizabeth Warren wants to take over the whole thing. Well, the problem with taking over the whole thing is it costs a hell of a lot of money. It's 1/6 of the U.S. economy. It is trillions of dollars. So if you take over that whole thing, guess how much you're going to have to pay? Trillions of dollars. Every year. Every single year. The question of cost was brought up with Elizabeth Warren, and her answer was that she wants to tax billionaires and large corporations. There aren't enough of them. So she was asked three times whether or not she would raise taxes on the middle class to help pay for this. Bernie Sanders, to his credit, has been very straightforward about it. Yes, we're going to pay more in taxes. Middle class is going to pay more in taxes. You've got to pay for this. Elizabeth Warren knows that that is electoral suicide. She remembers Walter Mondale in 1984 promising to raise taxes and losing every state but his home state and the District of Columbia. So Elizabeth Warren dodges three times on this question. Finally, Jake Tapper just boils it down to the essence and says, you know, basically, one last time, woman, will you give me an answer? Are you going to raise taxes in the middle class or what?
Just a point of clarification in 15 extra seconds. Would you raise taxes on the middle class to pay for Medicare for all, offset obviously by the elimination of insurance premiums? Yes or no?
Costs will go up for billionaires and go up for corporations. For middle class families, costs, total costs will go down.
Total costs will go down. This is the little shell game. Bernie is at least right out in front about it. Yeah, I'm going to raise your taxes, but you're not going to have to pay premiums anymore. So it'll be a wash. You won't have to pay deductibles. You won't have to do out-of-pocket costs. Everything will be free. It'll be great. Neither one of them are telling you the truth. Elizabeth Warren actually she got a fourth bite at the apple and totally bit her tongue on it. In the after game, in the spin room, she was asked about this.
Okay, on the question of costs for Medicare for All, you were asked about whether or not people's middle class taxes would go up. You said their costs would go down, but can you address directly whether taxes like mine would go up under Medicare for All?
I'll say it again. Costs are going to go up for billionaires. They're going to go up for giant corporations, and out-of-pocket costs for middle-class families are going to go down. It's costs that matter.
Your out-of-pocket costs will go down. It's costs that matter. Yes, it is costs that matter, Elizabeth, which is why we want to know how you're going to pay for this and how we're going to have to pay for this. Because we're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars. So she doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to answer it. Bernie kind of does, but he's dishonest too. And this is something I know a thing or two. If you're new to the program, I was a health policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Thankfully, I have forgotten a lot about health policy that I learned in that position, so I'm able to sleep at night. But some of it still sticks with me. And one thing I can tell you is healthcare is very expensive. So if you take everybody and put them on one plan, that's going to be very expensive. I know I'm not breaking new ground here, but wait for it. So say you're paying $10,000 a year for your family plan, which would be a pretty good deal after Obamacare, to be perfectly honest with you, if you got four people. Paying $10,000 a year. Under this plan of Bernie and Elizabeth, you would not be paying $10,000 a year. But you might not be, well, we'll just say that you're paying $10,000 a year, but it's a $40,000 policy. I'm using round numbers that I can easily remember. Your quarter of it, of the premiums, $10,000 a year. You wouldn't be paying that anymore. Your employer would not be paying that anymore either. So there's $40,000. The employer's not paying 30, you're not paying 10. So there's 30,000 net gain, or 40,000 net gain. 10 to you, 30 to your employer. Now, you get the government health plan. The government has to pay for that. So the government has to raise your taxes. Rather significantly, by the way, that would probably eat up, since it costs $40,000 a year to insure your family, it would more than likely eat up your $10,000 pretty quickly, not to mention your out-of-pocket costs and deductibles. You may end up on the better end of this if you were just in a vacuum. The problem is, like I said, there are 30 million people who are uninsured. There are millions more on Medicaid, which is a program for the poor. And all of these Democrats want to cover illegal aliens on top of it, or most of the Democrats do on top of that. So that is another 11 to 22 million people. So you take the 30 million uninsured and the 11 to 22 million illegal aliens, and you add them into the cost, you're looking at 40 to 50 million people that are going to be added into the pool who have never been paying into the system and will not be paying into the system. Where do you think the money is going to come from to cover them? It has to come from somewhere. Well, the millionaires and the billionaires. Well, I thought that the millionaires and billionaires and the large corporations were going to be taxed to pay for your $30,000 that your employer is putting in already. Because again, you got to come up with $40,000, not $10,000. $10,000 is just your piece. You begin to see how the math doesn't begin to add up. You also add in all the added benefits. Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are promising everything except plastic surgery. And if enough people raise a stink about that, they'll probably include that too. So when you have a plan that covers absolutely everything, that becomes kind of expensive. States with the most individual mandates for health plans in the individual market in their states have, oddly enough, the most expensive insurance rates in the country. Before Obamacare, I haven't checked it since then, but back when I was doing health policy, New Jersey, for example, was the most expensive state for health insurance. They also had the most mandates. If you wanted to sell a health insurance plan in the state of New Jersey, it had to offer a whole bunch of things that most people probably didn't want, but were politically popular, like, for example, artificial insemination. Maybe that's your thing, maybe you need it, it's not a value judgment, but it is very expensive, and it's not guaranteed to work, so a lot of people have to do it a bunch of times before they're able to get pregnant. Since very few people do it, you would think it wouldn't cost all that much money, but it's very expensive, so that raises the price. Now, it becomes an option. Since everybody in New Jersey has to have it, more people avail themselves of it, which, it's still expensive, means that the premiums go up for everyone. In a just system, the people who want to buy a health plan that includes that are going to have to pay more. Then you make that judgment, do I want to do this or do I not want to do that? Do I want a plan that does this or would I rather save the money? That's the way it's supposed to work in this country, but that's not the way it would work in this country on Medicare for All. Everything would be covered. Well, it has to come from somewhere, the money to pay for that. More importantly, as Congressman Delaney pointed out, I think it was Congressman Delaney, talking about going to rural hospitals. Medicare, doctors don't like Medicare. They like Medicare in one respect. It pays fairly quickly, but it pays less than they otherwise would charge. Because when you're the government, and on Medicare, I think it's 60 million senior citizens, you got 60 million customers for the medical profession. It behooves a lot of them to accept Medicare because, especially in rural areas, there are a lot of elderly people. If you're going to have a medical practice, the biggest biggest insurance that people are going to come in with is going to be Medicare. So you've got to accept Medicare. Although in places like Arizona, at least in the mid-2000s, there was no doctor that was accepting new Medicare patients because they're taking a loss. A lot of times, say a hip replacement costs a doctor $10,000 to perform, right? Just again, making up the numbers. The concept is what matters. Cost $10,000 to perform, and his time, his liability insurance, the hospital room and all the nurses and the assistants and everything involved, it's $10,000. So the doctor charges $15,000 to private health insurance or people without health insurance or whatever. It's got to make a little bit of profit. Well, Medicare comes in and says, that's nice that it costs you $10,000. They'll say, we'll pay $8,000 for this. And if you accept Medicare at all, you have to accept $8,000 for this hip replacement. There are doctors in this country who, it's not a lot of procedures in Medicare, but it's popular procedures in Medicare because the government has the upper hand. You can either have access to the 300,000 senior citizens living in this area, but you got to take it in the rear when it comes to hip replacements, or you don't get to take Medicare at all and your practice will likely suffer and go under. So you take it and you take a loss on hip replacement procedures. Well, that money has to be made up someplace. So instead of charging $15,000 or $12,000, you add that money on the other end of for everybody else. Medicare sets their own rates. There really isn't negotiation there. They say, we're the government. If you want to treat senior citizens, which if you're in the medical profession, that's going to be a big chunk of your business because the older people get, the more they need medical care, checkups, even if just checkups. So the government sets the prices there, and they don't care what the actual cost is. They have a formulary that determines what they are willing to pay. So you do that across the entire country. Well, suddenly, as Congressman Delaney pointed out, rural hospitals who get a lot of money from Medicare but take a loss on it, but they also make up for it with the private health insurance. If they suddenly have to take the lower rate for everything, the government setting the price, they're going to go out of business. They are literally going to go out of business. They cannot operate at a loss indefinitely. Hospitals do close, as weird as that concept seems. So you have to make up that money sooner or later somehow, or the way they'll make it up is coming after the middle class, because that's the only place with enough money, because there's more people in the middle class than anywhere else. Or government's going to have to ration what you can get, keep down prices artificially, make you wait, as what happens in Canada, where there aren't enough medical professionals, because why would you go through the hassle of 12 years of schooling, then another 4 years of schooling, and then another 4 years of medical school, and God knows how long your residency is going to be, if only you come out at the other end and you're making $35,000 a year as a government employee, because there will have to come a point when the federal government, since they are the provider of all of this, they're just going to have to make all hospital staff federal employees. They're going to have to set prices. Whereas a doctor can make more money if they see more patients, and you're just going to get a salary, and that's going to be what it is. So what do you end up with? People who have a passion for medicine, but also kind of want to live the good life that goes along with being a doctor and working your ass off that long, going, I'm going to try and do something else. If you're going to medical school, the odds are you're fairly bright. You could probably make a good living in something else. Maybe you go to law school, God forbid. Last thing we need is more lawyers. Or you go to Wall Street or in business or whatever. You're going to be less likely to see people go into medicine. So you're going to have a doctor shortage, which then means longer wait times. You see how this thing turns into a death spiral pretty quickly. And you think, well, we can go back to the old system. No, the old system will be destroyed. All those private health insurance companies who have set up these networks across the country will then be gone. You can't snap that back into being very quickly. It took years to set up. It would take years to set up again. And the companies that would have likely have gone on to do something else would be very hesitant, shall we say, to re-enter a market the government just decimated, even if the government swears, don't worry, we won't decimate it again. Nope, it's not going to work. So where do you go? Where do you appeal to? How do you get back what we lost? Part of Medicare, and this isn't widely known, and it's true in Canada as well, in their system, their socialized medicine system is called Medicare as well, is if something is covered by Medicare, you cannot pay for it out of pocket if you're on Medicare. Meaning if there's a wait or a better way or whatever, say you need a hip replacement, this was evident, there was a lawsuit, it's changing in Canada. Now, luckily for them, a guy named Dr. Chalooly, don't ask me how to spell it. I wrote about him at the time. It's probably still up at heritage.org. There was a guy named Chalooly who was a doctor wanting to perform a hip replacement. This guy, the patient, had enough money to pay for it. He was told that in the Medicare system, it was going to take 9 months. Nobody wants to wait 9 months if you need a hip replacement. You need a hip replacement, your hip hurts. You want to get back to your life. But you had to go to the back of the queue. That was the deal, that everyone gets to suffer equally under socialized medicine. So he had to wait 9 months, whereas you could get one in a couple of weeks here in the U.S. So he said, well, what if I'll just pay for it, all right? Can I pay you, Dr. Chalooly, to perform this hip replacement? And Dr. Chalooly said, I'd love to, but you can't. It's illegal to do that. You know, I could come in on a Saturday and bang this out, but it would be illegal. We would go to jail for this. This was in Quebec. Chalooly actually won because the government or the courts decided that it was cruel to make people wait if they didn't have to wait. But this is what happens in the United States too. And if you're under that system and the government says you're going to have to wait, who do you appeal to? Where do you go? You can pay out of pocket now if you have private health insurance and they're dicking you around. You can appeal to the private insurance. You can call local media and put pressure, public pressure on the insurance company if they're dicking you around. And that works. All of that works. But when it's the government, who do you go to? What's your alternative? There is no alternative. This is why this is wildly unpopular. And to his credit, Tim Ryan, congressman from Ohio, looked at all of these things, the open border stuff, the health care for all illegal aliens, taking away private health insurance that people like, and he said, this is going to get us killed. This is a recipe for disaster.
Now, in this discussion already tonight, we've talked about taking private health insurance away from union members in the industrial Midwest. We've talked about decriminalizing the border. And we've talked about giving free health care to undocumented workers when so many Americans are struggling to pay for their health care. I, quite frankly, don't think that that is an agenda that we can move forward on and win.
He's right. He's absolutely right, and that's why I'm glad that these Democrats are running on it. It does scare the hell out of me that they could win because elections are up in the air. You think, well, this is wildly unpopular, and never win. You have no idea what's going to be going through somebody's mind when they go into that polling place in 450 days or whatever it is. That's what's terrifying. But Tim Ryan, to his credit, was sticking to his guns. Even afterwards, he made the same case, and he made a dire prediction.
But providing health care for illegals, you're against it.
Well, for undocumented people, if they want to be able to buy health care, they should be able to buy it. I mean, we can't be paying for undocumented people to get free health care while every American is asked to pay for their health care.
That's against but what you Biden, Sanders, and Warren say.
We disagree.
To that end,
I think that's, you know, how are you going to go tell people in my congressional district in Youngstown, Ohio, that they're in their rear ends off to provide health care for their families, that an undocumented person in the country is going to get free health care? That is not going to work, and it's not fair, quite frankly. The undocumented worker should be able to pay for health care. It just shouldn't be free.
What happens in a district like yours if someone like that is at the top of the ticket? Does it make it for Democrats to win in places like Youngstown, Ohio?
It makes it very hard. I mean, I think if our nominee is talking about taking private health care away, I think we'll lose 48 states. And I'm having a rough time figuring out the two we're going to win.
He's absolutely right. He's still crazy. He wants, you know, most of what they're selling. He just wants to do it in a slower way. But this is where they are. This is who they are. This is what they are and how they're going to be. It doesn't matter, full steam ahead. Well, that iceberg ain't going to swerve. It's going to be interesting to see tonight's debate if this issue comes up again, if they spend as much time on it. The Medicare for all, the socialized medicine, really is a big issue for Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. It's an issue for everyone else, but it's not as big an issue. This is Bernie's been chomping at the bit to get his hands on the healthcare system in this country, and Elizabeth Warren is his fellow traveler and co-pilot in taking this country to hell. I'll be curious to see if the CNN anchors tomorrow push them as far as they did tonight and let them go and stick on this thing. They could just come up with a completely different topics. Who knows? One thing that didn't come up tonight was Robert Mueller at all, or last night, was Robert Mueller at all. I thought that was the most important issue facing mankind, certainly this country. But no, it was all or mostly about health care and then helping the illegal aliens, decriminalizing border crossings to encourage more people. So you offer them free health care, you offer them the ability to work, and then you make crossing the border not a crime. And guess what happens? You get a massive flooding of the zone. And this country becomes absolutely screwed. Just since he was kind of a non-entity, and I want to play this one clip because it shows just how hypocritical Pete Buttigieg is. He really, somebody who's a Christian must have screwed him over. He claims to be a Christian. He doesn't seem to understand Christianity very much at all. But in talking about the minimum wage, Mayor Pete decided to go after Republicans, so-called Christians. And, well, I'll play it for you and we'll talk about it after.
The minimum wage is just too low. And so-called conservative Christian senators now in the Senate are blocking a bill to raise the minimum wage when scripture says that whoever oppresses the poor taunts their maker.
Mayor, thank you very much.
Now, not voting for the minimum wage is oppressing the poor. How about the poor earn more? Scripture also says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Scripture also doesn't say anything about a minimum wage or a living wage. You got to pay people what you somebody else not involved in your industry thinks they're worth. But I will note this, and this is what really makes it hypocritical. Aside from the venomous anger that Pete has toward Christians, he's been attacking Christians an awful lot. Democrats love talking about the separation of church and state. That's how you can end up with someone like Mayor Pete. I'm a Christian, but I support abortion. Or Nancy Pelosi. I am a Catholic, but I am pro-abortion right up until the 18th birthday. They say that we must have a separation of church and state, that our founding fathers, in fact, insisted on a wall of separation of church and state, constantly quoting Thomas Jefferson. The only time they quote Thomas Jefferson. The rest of the time, he's a horrible, racist slave owner. But when it comes to that, the guy who wrote that people were endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights in our Declaration of Independence was insistent that there be a wall of separation between church and state. Yet they use religion to justify their actions of the state. They used a distorted version of religion to justify their actions on behalf of the state. It is the biggest hypocritical thing you can possibly imagine. It is shameless. It's transparently shameless. And the crowd applauding and Don Lemon getting sexually aroused at the prospect of it tells you all you need to know about the tactic and how effective it is on people who are desperate to have somebody else do their thinking for them. Afterwards, the analysis was not particularly good. Over at CNN, John King was talking about how far left this field had gone, how whack job they are.
What Senator Sanders was just describing, what Senator Warren is describing, has not happened in our lifetime. That a Democrat can run in a national election to be for Medicare for all, for free college tuition, maybe for reparations, for giving health care to undocumented immigrants, a host of liberal proposals, way to the left of the last Democrat who won, Barack Obama, way, 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 way left to Bill Clinton, the Democrat to win before that. My first campaign was Dukakis. He was not as liberal as many of the positions.
They're all a bunch of nuts. These are the furthest left I've ever seen. And one was more left than the other one. That was what was really funny about this, was they didn't seem to be aware of the fact that there's a general election that has to happen. Now, the general election is quite a ways away, and should one of the people from this debate stage or the next one, and this is what I'll find interesting about tonight's debate. Given the answers, given how far left these people went, I'm curious to see if Jake Tapper, Dana Bash, and Dumb Lemon, although if I were CNN, I would tell Don to, you're sick. Just tell everybody you're sick. You're not going up and moderating. You were an embarrassment. We're going to leave the other two up there, but you can't do it again. That's just me. I sort of have a romantic nostalgia for what journalism is supposed to be, and Don Lemon ain't it. But And I'd be curious to see if these, because make no mistake, Jake Tapper and Dana Bash are liberals. I'd be curious to see if they take the debate in a more moderate direction, or maybe focus on foreign policy a little bit more to try and keep the discussion, because you've got Kamala Harris and Joe Biden up there tomorrow. They probably want to protect them a little bit. So you want to keep it away from the really wacky, crazy stuff. Because if the first debate stage is tainted with the lunacy that happened tonight, you got to have somebody viable if you're a Democrat at all interested in winning the White House. It'll be telling to see how CNN, if they pump the brakes, or if maybe they're told, go easier on this. Don't spend so much time on health care, for example, because it's a very complicated, complex issue. And, you know, Joe might not be able to handle that discussion if you go more. He's a mile wide and an inch deep. So don't probe him too hard on these things. Or Kamala Harris is always wants to just, we'll have to have that discussion about it. That's her, seems to be her go-to answer on everything. So it'll be interesting to see how far they go on this. Because what happened last night should scare the hell out of anybody. Anybody who thinks that they're already taxed too high. Anybody who likes personal responsibility and thinks the absolution of personal responsibility on people has a detrimental impact, because if there's no consequences to your bad decisions, you're going to get more bad decisions. That's how it works. And the Democratic Party wants you to, if you want to major in feminist dance theory and take out $200,000 in student loans, don't worry. They got a plan to make sure that your obviously, patently, transparently stupid choices don't have any consequence in the real world, that you'll be taken care of. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But it wasn't just CNN. It wasn't just one guy on CNN. Shockingly, and I mean this sincerely, shockingly, MSNBC went through some national polling and compared what the Democratic nominees and the Democratic primary voters that they polled think about a particular issue, and then juxtapose that with what the rest of, what all of America thinks. And as you can imagine, there is a chasm between them. But to their credit, Steve Kornacki went through just a few of them. It's pretty bad on most of them. But he picked some that were really the worst. He could have done a lot more. And highlighted to the audience. Now this is, he's talking to the Democratic base. This is MSNBC. This is 11 o'clock at night. This is Brian Williams' show. And he's basically telling them the opposite of what every MSNBC host and anchor and journalist tells them. They're constantly telling their audience that we are the majority. The people are with us. This is wildly popular. Everybody wants this. And were it not for those evil damn Republicans, we would have this socialist utopia already. Steve Kornacki comes along and points out polling data that shows that that is a lie. I told you, the primetime lineup on MSNBC, they're not stupid. They're smart people. They're just liars. They're just frauds. They patently, blatantly lie to their audience. Steve Kornacki is telling them, it won't register, but he's telling them exactly that.
The numbers may back up what we saw tonight.
Yeah, interesting, that dynamic you're talking about, sort of the moderate candidates going after Warren, going after Sanders, and even sounding that alarm potentially about electability. We've got some new data that's out recently that measures some of these issues that came up, where Democratic voters are, the folks who are going to vote in the primary versus where general election voters are. There are some interesting divides here. This question of Medicare for all without private insurance. That was a major part of this debate tonight. You see, Democratic voters, more than 2-to-1 support this. 64% support, 31% opposed. Ask the same question to all Americans. General election voters, the folks who vote in November, very different story. 41% say it's a good idea. A majority, 54%, say it's a bad idea. How about this one? How about decriminalizing border crossings? That obviously came up again tonight, as it did the first debate. Democrats are split on this question. 45 support, 47 oppose. How about all voters, general election voters, overwhelming opposition on that, 27-66. Another issue you heard about, this is national health insurance. Should there be a program that makes it available to undocumented immigrants? Again, among Democrats, basically 2-1 that proposition, 60-32. Among general election voters, complete opposite. And one more that came up late in the night, that question of reparations payments amongst Democrats, 46 support, 40% say bad idea. Among all voters, again, 27-62. So you see those sort of moderate candidates. This is what they're expressing on that stage. But when the energy on the Democratic side is somewhere else, that's the power behind those comebacks that you heard from Warren and Sanders.
That is the Democratic Party voter. They want these things, and they want them now. They're very Veruca Salt-like. They want their golden goose, and they want it now. The American people are on a different page. Overwhelmingly, you heard the numbers there. The Democrats don't care. The party that chants when they're shouting people down trying to speak, that they chant, this is what democracy looks like, don't give a whip about democracy. If they get their hands on power, they will ram it through. They will cram it through. They care about actual democracy and what people want as much as Bill Clinton cares about his wedding vows. But to see the numbers is interesting. None of this, of course, means that that's how anybody's going to vote. Anything could change somebody's vote. That's the danger, and that's the danger to both sides, quite frankly, between now and Election Day. But it's very interesting to note how wildly unpopular with the general public the not just issues, some of the issues, but the actual priorities are for Democrats compared to the rest of the country. It makes perfect sense to me, and I bet it makes perfect sense to you, that the American people don't think it's a super great idea to decriminalize crossing the border illegally and then offer free health care to anybody who happens to set foot in this country. Don't worry about it. We got this one. That's obviously a bad idea, especially when we're expected to pick up the tab and they can just jet back and forth whenever. I mean, you won't even get people crossing the southern border. You will get people who are sick flying to this country from around the world. We don't have to pay for it. That's great. Let's do it. I can cut the wait times, at least for a while. I can get it done over there. The American healthcare system right now, as it's constituted, is the best in the world. So people will come over here and do that. That's going to cost money. We're going to have to pay that. Democrats get to pat themselves on the back for being so compassionate, and we get to pick up the check. It's like the magnanimous douchebag at a big dinner who says, you know what, let's order a couple of bottles of wine for the table and a whole bunch of appetizers. And then when the check comes, goes, why don't we split the check evenly across everywhere? And meanwhile, they ate all the appetizers and drank all the wine. Like, no, just because you said you were ordering it for the table, that's just not going to get you out of responsibility. You're the only one who got it, drank it, ate it, you wanted it, you ordered it, you paid for it. Well, that's not going to happen with these Democrats. So it'll be curious to see how this continues to play out. But if the Republicans are looking for an opening, something to hammer these issues right here, reminding people over and over and over again, the Democrats want to talk about reparations. The candidates up on stage came out in favor of reparations again, talking about how horribly racist this country is. Nancy Pelosi was over in Africa on a junket the other day, and I think she was in, I forget where she was, Lagos or something like that. And maybe, no, that was House Hunters International. But she's over there in Africa, and she was marking the 400th anniversary of the first enslaved people being kidnapped from their native lands and brought to the United States. And it was just so horrible. It was actually the 400th anniversary of the first meeting of a government in this country in Jamestown yesterday. But Democrats prefer to think of it as that's when the horror started in this country. Of course, this country wasn't founded until either 1776 or 1789, whichever date you choose to decide when this country was founded, the Declaration of the Constitution. I prefer the Constitution, and was ended in 1865. So we didn't have slavery in this country, actually, for even 100 years. We fought a civil war to end it. More importantly, and one thing that the left never remarks about, is there weren't a whole bunch of white people just running across Africa, kidnapping people and enslaving them. The Africans themselves, slavery was well established for millennia on the continent of Africa before Whitey came around. Whitey might have introduced commerce to it, but not the concept of slavery. People were enslaved and bought and sold to slave traders by Africans. They just happened to be selling Africans from other tribes. It was a warring continent, just like Europe had its wars, just like there were wars over here. So the left chooses to ignore that, blame Whitey, blame America more than anything, even though slavery still exists on the continent of Africa, by the way. You don't hear Democrats talking about that either. Anyway, I'm straying from the point. The takeaway from the Democratic debate is that none of those people up on that stage have a particularly positive image, idea, attitude about this country. They don't seem to like it very much. If you were dating somebody who talked to you the way that Democrats talk about this country, you would dump them unless you had the lowest self-esteem on the planet. Sadly, we have a lot of Americans who have that similar view of the United States, and it's going to be a fight all the way up to November 8th or whenever, November 6th, whatever the hell the election day is. Stay ever vigilant. Choke down as much of these debates as you possibly can. Talk to your friends and your family and remind them just how crazy they are, particularly on these four points. The president is likely going to say something or do something a couple of dozen times between now and then that people who only pay passive attention to the news will not like, will be wildly uncomfortable with, will think is crazy or unbecoming of the president. It doesn't matter what the president says. It matters what the president does. And what the president does is much better than what any of these nut jobs would do as president. We have to keep our eyes on the goal line. The goal line is what's important. Until we get there, keep your elbows sharp and keep them up. Tomorrow we'll be back with another episode. We got a whole nother debate. Good Lord. The next round of debates should be a thinner herd. I'll be interested to see if Andrew Yang actually gets to speak tonight. He spoke by far the least in the first round of debates. He seems like an interesting guy, but if he doesn't step up and make an impact, if you can't outshine the crystal guru lady, you probably should drop out of the race. Anyway, I'll watch it, even if you don't, so I'll watch it so you don't have to, but I highly encourage you to. Otherwise, be back here tomorrow for another exciting episode where we'll go over all of it again. Have a great Wednesday.
What do you say to those Trump voters who prioritize the economy over the president's bigotry?
This is CNN.